You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Southern men, the thunders mutter, northern flags and south winds flutter, to arms, to arms, to arms, in Dixie. Send them back your fierce defiance, stamp upon the cursed alliance, to arms, to arms, to arms, in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie, hurrah, hurrah, for Dixie's land we take our stand, and live or die for Dixie. To arms, to arms, to arms, and conquer peace for
Obviously there, a little bit of a reinterpretation of our national anthem. That's the war version of Dixie as we head back into the final 2 hours of our Confederate History Month coverage in 2024. James Edwards and Keith Alexander revisiting a classic interview with Congressman Walter Jones as we were talking about the situation, the $95 billion, or the latest $95 billion going abroad. And serving zero of America's vital interests. In fact, working against them.
Just bleeding us dry, actually. Yeah.
But we are getting back to this, and we are going to wrap up Confederate History Month 2024 with gusto. We wrapped up, I'm a little sad, Keith, I have to admit, that these 2 months are coming to an end because we have so much fun with these fantastic guests during March and April. And we wrapped up March Around the World, interestingly enough, in Puerto Rico. But right before that, we had Taylor Young of Antelope Hill Publishing on. And we work with Antelope Hill Publishing quite closely. And at least one of their content creators, if not Taylor himself, is on with us every month. And I asked Taylor, I said, what could you give us that would tie into the March Around the World theme? And he was on to talk about a couple of books made available to you by Antelope Hill Publishing about the Spanish, particularly the fascist era in Spain's history, as we were talking about the Spain from the Age of Exploration to World War II. And Taylor did, I mean, he's been on with us a few times. I thought it was the best appearance he's ever done. And that's not to say that the others weren't anything less than excellent, but it was fantastic. And I really enjoyed it. And I said, Taylor, what can you give us for Confederate History Month? And now he is here to show us or to tell us. Anyway, Taylor, let us first say hello. How are you tonight, my friend?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be on here again. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are, and we're always doing well when we're talking with you. And so while Antelope Hill Publishing doesn't have a book pertaining to the war years of 1861 to 1865, you said the best-fitting book of your catalog would be The Tyranny of Human Rights, from Jacobinism to the United Nations, and this is by author Kerry Bolton. Now, it doesn't cover the war years of the South specifically, but it does talk about the removal of Confederate statues in a chapter entitled The Erasure of Memory. And so we're going to slide back into Confederate History Month from that angle and that approach. Take it away, Taylor.
Thank you. So the book is, like I said, it's by Kerry Bolton, who is also the author of Generation 68, about the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s. And you could see that book, which we talked about on the show a little while ago, as kind of like a zoomed-in view on that specific period of American history, and Tyranny of Human Rights kind of takes a zoomed out view where it looks at the whole legacy of the European Enlightenment and the values of equality that morphed into the values of social justice and human rights and the impact that they've had basically ever since on European history and on American history. So it talks about like some of the early ways that this started being developed with even earlier than the French Revolution with the English Civil War, and then with the French Revolution, obviously, and then throughout American history, it played a large role then, into the Soviet Union and the United Nations and so on. But I think America is one of the places where this battle has been fought for the longest and in some ways, most openly. And not just the Civil War itself, but like you were saying, looking back or like from our perspective today and looking today at the way that Confederate history is treated and, the history of the Civil War is treated in American culture and in American discourse, you see, again, the impact of those centuries of liberalism and liberal thought, which have as they grow in power, as they become more hegemonic, you have you really see the fruition of those Enlightenment ideals of equality and of human rights, and how they're used ultimately to destroy European heritage in all of its forms, and that includes the heritage of the Confederacy, which is, I think, pretty widely recognized. It's one of the most intrinsically American cultures that you can find. So there is a portion of the book that does talk about the Confederate statues being taken down as part of this kind of ongoing cultural revolution.
And this book, again, I'm going to toss it to Keith, but the name of the book is The Tyranny of Human Rights. That is a provocative title, and you know exactly what the point of it is. I get it immediately from the title. It's available at antelopehillpublishing.com. And what we're talking with Taylor Young about, he is one of the editors there, a part of the editorial board at AHP. And it's a discussion about how the Confederacy and certainly Southern heritage especially is an intrinsic part of American history, which liberalism destroys as part of its attack on white racial identity. I think that's the theme that we're tying into this book, right, Taylor?
Yep, that's it.
Taylor, Keith Alexander here. How are you doing, my friend? Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Let me just say this. You were mentioned in passing Oliver Cromwell and his revolutionary forces, and I learned fairly recently, I guess within the past 5 years, that one of his big things once he gained control was to let the Jews come back to England, which makes me think that the Jews probably provided him with some type of monetary support to keep his government afloat. And then you consider, if that happened, look at the American Revolution, look at the Civil War, look at what happened in World War I and World War II. And what I'm seeing is that if the Jews align with you, you win. And if the Jews do not align with you, you lose. Now, in the Civil War, there was one prominent Jew in the Confederate government, Judah Benjamin. And some people say he's the one who spirited off all the Confederate gold to England, where he set up a very profitable practice as a barrister and wrote a law book on contracts, I believe. So what is, and if you see any connection at all between Jewish power and influence and what happened to in the Civil War with the Confederacy losing and the Union winning?
Yeah, well, I think that probably in the Civil War is one of the many examples of them basically playing both sides and, seeing which one would come out on top. I think you could certainly look at it from the perspective that ultimately the Confederacy was fighting to preserve a greater degree of European heritage and of a hierarchical
autonomy.
Social structure. Than the Union. Although, the Union was at that point in history, like most people in the Union didn't want to free the slaves any more than the Southerners did. There were other reasons for the war as well. But I think you're right to kind of point out that on kind of the long view of history, it definitely was a blow against those ideals and for ultimately what would be Jewish interests in America and in general in European civilization. So I think that's probably the tie-in there. Now, it does also make me think of, in Tyranny of Human Rights, one of the things that Kerry Bolton talks about is, again, going back to the attack on Confederate heritage and on American history with the statues that were removed, which started really with 2017 and then also accelerated in 2020. It's something that... like you pointed out, there was big money behind it. Basically, this was things that there were grants obtained to do this from the Rockefeller Foundation and other organizations. So there was big money behind it, and like you point out, Jews have a lot of money and they use it for these kinds of causes ultimately that are destructive to the European heritage.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are wrapping up Confederate History Month 2024. As you listen in real time right now, if you're tuned in live, you catch us in the archives, we're wrapping it up here on Saturday night with Taylor Young. He's helping us do that from Antelope Hill Publishing. We'll be right back with him.
The Honorable Cause of Free South is a collection of 12 essays written by Southern nationalist authors. The book explores topics such as what is the Southern nation, what is Southern nationalism, and how can we achieve a free and independent Dixie. The Honorable Cause answers questions on our own terms. The book invites readers to understand for themselves why a free and independent Dixie is both preferable and possible. The book pulls in some of the biggest producers of pro-South content, including James Edwards, the host and creator of The Political Cesspool, and Wilson Smith, author of Charlottesville Untold, Arkansas congressional candidate and activist Neil Kumar, host and creator of the Dissident Mama podcast, Rebecca Dillingham, author of A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, Identity Dixie's Patrick Martin, and yours truly, Michael Hill, founder and president of the League of the South, as well as several other authors. The Honorable Cause is available now at Amazon.com.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Fear no danger, shun no labor, lift up rifle, pike, and saber. To arms,
to arms,
to arms,
to arms,
to arms,
to arms
in Dixie. Shoulder pressing close to shoulder, let the odds make each heart bolder. To arms,
to arms,
to arms,
to arms,
to arms
in Dixie. Advance the flag of Dixie. Hurrah, hurrah, for Dixie's land we take our stand and live or die for Dixie.
Arms
and conquer peace for Dixie.
To arms,
to arms,
to arms,
and conquer peace for Dixie.
Ladies and gentlemen, back with our good friend Taylor Young, and I got to sing the praises of Antelope Hill Publishing just a little bit more here. Number one, is there anything that they can't cover? There's never been a guest that has appeared in both March Around the World and Confederate History Month done it well.
Well, they cover all the obscure parts of history and bring them to light. And that's, that's a Herculean task. They and the Barnes Review, I think, are doing yeoman work for our service, for our cause, by doing that and showing, for example, like we did in the last segment, the connection of Jewish power and influence from the English Commonwealth, the so-called Glorious Revolution, all the way through today.
I want to say this also. You've got to check it out, folks. If you're not a currently subscribed to American Free Press, get a subscription. We've got a Q&A interview coming up with Anke Vandermeersch. former Miss Belgium, former Miss Universe, current senator in Belgium, longtime friend. You love Anka, right, Keith?
Oh, yeah. We had a great time with her and Philip DeWinter over here in Memphis, took them around, and it was really a high point of our show, I think.
Well, that was a few years ago, and we've stayed in touch with them ever since, and they make regular appearances. Well, anyway, I've been talking with Anka the last few days, and anyway, we get this Q&A for American Free Press. Now, if you write for American Free Press, you get a preview of the current issues. You can go back to the editor and say, let's change this, or here are my thoughts on that. It's a fantastic interview with Anka, I got to say. But when I was perusing the issue, I came across this full-page ad for Antelope Hill Publishing, and it looked fantastic. And then I go to Amran.com, and I see a digital ad for Antelope Hill Publishing. And, of course, we run ads for them, and we work with them every month, and we've been better for it. The last year or two, going back a year or two, we've settled into this thing where we feature them every month. And it's just been fantastic, a real powerhouse. It is the intellectual steak, but you also get the sizzle because everything is so well produced. So
it's,
Taylor,
it's revisionist history with plenty of substance behind it.
Well, they got that and a lot of other things. I mean, they've got kids books. I mean, it really covers the entire broad spectrum. I'm getting a little bit off course here, but anyway, Taylor, I wanted to just salute you because y'all are everywhere and for good reason.
Well, thank you very much. We try to get all the partnerships and working together with everyone that we can just to keep this thing moving forward.
Well, that's a key thing, and that's something that I've always tried to do. We've always tried to work well with others and dispense with beefs and fly above the turbulence and just working in a cooperative and a collaborative effort, and you've been wonderful in that regard, and so I hope it continues for a long, long, long time to come. Back to the book we're talking about here, The Tyranny of Human Rights. The manner by which Enlightenment doctrines shaped liberalism and the bloody progenies of Jacobinism and Bolshevism, the author Kerry Bolton, writing for Antelope Hill Publishing in this book, demonstrates that the inevitable consequences of these doctrines being predicated on the fallacy of universal equality is the need for increasingly draconian laws, pervasive indoctrination, and where these are insufficient, color revolution and war. Like Jacobin doctrine of liberty, equality, fraternity, so-called, I should say, and these are in quotations, these measures undertaken in the name of so-called human rights and equality and social justice, God help us, are largely directed towards the destruction of the European peoples. The ultimate aim behind the humanitarian facade is a world state where people, resources, technology, and capital can be moved about without any hindrance from nation states, races, cultures, and even families. So that's the book, The Tyranny of Human Rights, extensively sourced, foreword by Tom Sunich, our good friend. He was on with us last month, Professor Ed Dutton. Antelope Hill Publishing brings it to you. Keith, you heard the back page description there. Anything tickle your fancy?
Well, everything about them tickles my fancy, to tell you the truth. It's just they are an indispensable asset for our movement because they, for example, I think in the last month they started publishing works by some of the lesser-known figures in the Spanish Civil War.
Well, we talked about that last month.
Yeah, and see, where else are you going to find that type of publication? You would have to, be combing through the archives of the British Museum or something probably to do that. But instead, Antelope Hill brings these things out where they're accessible and reasonably priced.
Well, and I like where they're talking about the Jacobin doctrine of liberty, equality, and fraternity, human rights, equality, social justice. Aristotle had a quote about this, and I'll turn it back over to Taylor to respond and give us a little more information about this book. Aristotle, here's a quote: "The worst form of inequality is to try to make unequal things equal." Taylor, to you.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a big theme of the book. And I think there was a part where Bolton cites, I think it was Solzhenitsyn, who talks about the same issue, basically, and how it's kind of ironic that this was the motto of the French Revolution, the liberty, equality, that it will have liberty and equality side by side because they are, in fact, opposites of each other. They're things that can't get along. In fact, liberty will inevitably bring about inequality, because the more freedom, the more liberty you give to people, the more they're going to express their own abilities and their own drive and their own hard work, and it's going to necessarily create inequality. So the only way to create equality is to drive everything down to the same common denominator. You know, you can't raise everything up to some specific standard. You have to just grind things down until they're all the same, and that's going to inevitably end up, you know, destroying hard work, destroying creativity, destroying innate natural talent and character. So that's really what, you know, the promise of this kind of slogan, or of the idea of human rights, or the idea of liberty, may, you know, it may be what it is, but we see again throughout the long view of history what it actually means, and what it actually means is greater tyranny in the name of equality, and the continual grinding down of both individual freedom and individual creativity, as well as on like a larger civilizational scale, you know, of the European civilization, which was, you know, foremost in so many ways.
But, you know, Taylor, meritocracy has also been infiltrated and poisoned by the left. For example, Jewish admissions to highly selective colleges like Harvard and Yale. Ron Unz pointed out, he exploded the myth that Jews are just smarter than the rest of us with an article he did in 2012 about
meritocracy. Unz himself is Jewish, of course.
Right, yeah. That, for example, he compared the Duke talent search winners with the admissions to Harvard, Yale, and places like that, and found out that basically white Gentiles are just as smart and probably a bit smarter than Jews, but Jews got all the admissions there. So see,
well, they also work as a collective instead of as individualists, and that's right. A big, big, huge advantage.
So whether it's equality, artificial equality, or an artificial meritocracy, they've got both sides of that coin covered.
I want to encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, to go to Antelope Hill Publishing. Check out the book we're talking about this segment and the previous segment as well, The Tyranny of Human Rights from Jacobinism to the United Nations by Kerry Bolton. Our guest right now, Taylor Young of the editorial board of Antelope Hill, is here to talk about it and tie it into Confederate history, as he did so deftly. Browse the entire catalog. I will be making a purchase here before I get off the program tonight of A Fly in the Hive. I love my son's 9 years old. And I love reading to him at night before bed. We're currently reading Robinson Crusoe, but there is stuff for all people in the family there at AntelopeHillPublishing.com. Final question to you on this, talking about these principles of freedom and liberty and so on and so forth. I defend the American Founding Fathers more than some of our contemporaries, Taylor. I don't think there's any way they could have foreseen in the 18th century transgenderism or America slipping into this Sodom and Gomorrah-like state that we're in. But I will freely admit they were far too drunk on the Enlightenment principles. And the final word to you on that.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a complicated topic, and I think maybe you can kind of bring it back around to the Civil War on this, you know, ultimately, and to back to Keith's question as well on how the Jewish influence factored in on that, and, you know, they always are happy to see Gentiles fight amongst each other, but, you know, ultimately the Civil War was part of our history, and we should be able to see these different forces and these different ideas that struggled throughout American history all the way since, you know, even before the Revolution, and the ideas of the Enlightenment, and as well as others that were present, and you know, acknowledge that this is all part of our history. It is all worth, you know, preserving and worth exploring and debating. And you know, I agree with you that we definitely, you know, I wouldn't support throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. You know, America is an absolutely fantastic country, and I was actually just at one of the kind of landmarks of the Revolution with my wife the other day, and it's just kind of like reignited in me that love that I had when I was younger, when I was growing up, for the battles of that period and everything.
Oh,
so
yeah.
we have an absolutely glorious history. And it's not something that we should surrender either to iconoclasts who want to destroy our statues or to people who want to, you know, say that, you know, the Bill of Rights means that we should have trannies reading to kids or anything like that.
Exactly. AntelopePillPublishing.com, folks. Better yourself. Thank you, Taylor.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jen Gelber. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell told NBC's Meet the Press that he doesn't believe presidents should have absolute immunity for actions taken while in office. This comes as the Supreme Court heard arguments related to former President Trump on Thursday. McConnell reiterated his stance, which he made after voting to acquit Trump following the 2021 Capitol riot, suggesting that the former president could be held accountable by the justice system. He emphasized that it would ultimately be up to the Supreme Court to decide. A Florida Republican is no fan of President Biden's proposed tax plan. USA's Tim Berg has the details.
President Joe Biden is proposing an aggressive tax plan that could affect millions across the country after promising not to hurt the middle class financially. Speaking on Fox Business, Florida Republican Congressman Byron Donalds says former President Trump's policies should be restored.
Trump's tax policy has worked out for all of America. The federal government has raised more tax revenue since Trump's tax policy has been in place. And last but not least, why would we listen to the master of disaster, Joe Biden, about raising taxes when his own son avoided paying taxes?
It's now illegal to sell weight loss and muscle building supplements to minors in New York, the first state in the country to enact the law. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration oversees the market for these items, but it doesn't test products before they're sold. State lawmakers in Massachusetts are now considering passing a similar law. New York's law allows the state to fine businesses who sell kids diet pills or supplements that promote themselves as helping build muscle or burn fat. Protein supplements and shakes are exempt unless they contain another weight loss or muscle building ingredient. I'm Jen Gelber, USA News.
Hey, here's a question. After you wear your clothes, you toss them in the washing machine, right? Nobody wants to wear dirty clothes. So how do we not throw your shoes in the washing machine when they get dirty? I mean, come on. Your shoes are touching the filthy ground all day long. Gross. But with Skechers, you can. Because most Skechers are machine washable. That's right. Skechers are specially made so you can toss them right in the washing machine and keep them clean and looking new. And when they look new, you can confidently wear them longer. That's less shoes you're going to want to throw away, which means less waste. And it'll save you tons of dough. I love that. Plus, machine washable Skechers are for the whole family, men, women, and kids. So when your kids get their shoes dirty, oh, and we know they will, just wash them. Brilliant. And even our latest technology, new hands-free Skechers slip-ins are washable. You just step right in and go without bending down or even touching your shoes. So give your Skechers the same treatment you give your clothes. Just toss them in the washing machine and keep them looking brand spanking new. Buy machine washable Skechers at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear happens to be sold.
Hey friends, James Edwards here again to remind you that Antelope Hill Publishing is America's premier provider of dissident literature. They print books that mainstream publishers are too afraid to touch, providing you with information you need to challenge the status quo. Whether your interest includes contemporary dissident politics, history that would otherwise be censored or slandered, philosophy, or exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you'll find plenty to love in the Antelope Hill catalog, which includes books such as Generation 68, The Elite Revolution and Its Legacy, about the elite-driven cultural revolution of the 1960s, which transformed America, Whitey on the Moon, about the demise of the space program due to diversity, The Sword of Christ, which argues for restoring Christianity as the foundation of the West and combating heresies like Christian Zionism, speeches by Mussolini and other historical figures, and much more. With new titles added every month, there's no doubt that they have something for everyone. So check out their catalog today at AntelopePillPublishing.com.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record.
Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Stand up, Virginia! Stand up, you man! Stand up, you free man! We're gonna drive them! We're gonna drive them to Washington! Stand up, Virginia! Touch the gate! Reserve your fire! Till they come within 50 yards! Take fire! And keep them the bayonet! And when you charge,
ah, that gives me chills every time I see it. Again, I gotta mention it one more time. Maybe only because Warner Brothers contacted us about 2011 and asked us to help work with them to promote
the movie,
the re-release of the movie for the 150th anniversary of the War Between the States. But that, again, I got to give this guy credit. Stephen Lang is the actor. He's a Jewish actor from New York. And he said by the time he finished studying up to play Stonewall Jackson, he was a believer in the cause. Jeff Daniels, who's a Gentile, played Joshua Chamberlain in the movie. And he said when they saw each other, they couldn't even look at each other because he was so into character. He said he would just look at him and frown and grunt. But anyway, and he talked about the just effusive praise on Stonewall Jackson. In that clip, he says, "Rise up, Virginia. We're going to charge him. We're going to push him back to Washington." This is at the Battle of First Manassas. "When you charge, yell like furies and give them the bayonet." And that goes back to, of course, the genesis of the rebel yell. This is Confederate History Month, and I want to talk about the rebel yell here.
That was a great strategy. It's a shame that PGT Beauregard countermanded it.
Listen to the background of this. I mean, of all the things we've talked about during Confederate History Month, and I mean, there's so many stories, so many heroes. How could you ever do it in just a few hours of commercial talk radio 1 month a year? You can't. You can only just sort of just broad stroke it. But the rebel yell. Now, one of the earliest accounts of the yell being used in the War Between the States is right there at First Manassas. The Yankees call it Bull Run. Stonewall Jackson gave the order to yell like furies. The rebel yell, of course, became a battle cry used by the Confederate soldiers. They yelled when charging to intimidate the enemy and also to boost their own morale. One description says it sounded like a cross between an Indian whoop and a wolf howl. In Ken Burns' documentary, The Civil War, historian Shelby Foote noted that the yell was described as, quote, "a fox hunt yip mixed with a scream of a banshee." Former Union soldiers described the effect that hearing the yell had on them. One Yankee veteran said, quote, "a peculiar corkscrew sensation went up your spine when you heard it. If you claim you heard it and you weren't scared, it means that you never heard it." "To have fought with brothers and to have had a fighting chance at victory, what a wonderful thing that must have been. They were the last people who fought that way on this continent for our race, and to have had a chance." In his own autobiography, My Own Story, Bernard Brock recalls how his father, a former surgeon in the Confederate Army, would, at the sound of the song Dixie, jump up and give the rebel yell no matter where he was. Quote, "as soon as the tune started, Mother knew what was coming, and so did we boys. Mother would catch him by the coattails and plead, 'Shush, doctor, shush,' but it never did any good. I have only seen Father, an ordinarily model of reserve and dignity, leap up in the Metropolitan Opera House and let loose that piercing yell." Another claim that it was derived from the screams traditionally made by the Irish and Scottish Highlanders when they made the Highland charge during battle. at the Battle of Killiecrankie, Dundee and the chief chose to employ the most effective free battle weapon in the traditional, I'm sorry, folks, it's hard to even read this, arsenal, the eerie and discontenting howl. The terror was heightened by their wild, plated appearance and that distinctive war cry, a high, savage, whooping sound. You can't suppress who you are. You can't suppress who you are, I should say, but you have to embrace the best version of yourself. Keith, this was the best that our people ever were on this continent, and we've had heroes before and we've had heroes since, but this was a do-or-die battle and a do-or-die expression, that maniacal maelstrom of sound, that penetrating, rasping, shrieking, blood-curdling noise that could be heard for miles and whose volume reached the heavens.
Well, two observations based on your commentary. First of all, you mentioned Dundee. That's our ancestral heritage finding expression in the Revel Yell. That Dundee you're talking about was the same Dundee who was featured in the traditional Scottish folk song Bonnie Dundee.
Not Crocodile Dundee.
You're right, yeah. But Bonnie Dundee, okay? And that's a great song, and if you're not familiar with it, I ask you to look it up and listen to it. Then the other thing is, why, if we had right on our side, did we lose? Well, I've got a very simple answer to that. Leo Durocher said it best, nice guys finish last. It's not known widely, but only one Union town was burned to the ground by Confederate troops in the Civil War. That was Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, which was accomplished under Jubal Early's troops to protest Sherman's march to the sea. Meanwhile, burning down towns, crops, farmhouses, leaving people totally bereft of the ability to shelter themselves or to eat, that was standard operating procedure by Yankee forces like Sherman and Grant. That's exactly what happened in, for example, we said one Union town was burnt to the ground. 43 towns were burnt to the ground in Mississippi alone in the Civil War, and Mississippi wasn't even a major theater in the war. So consequently, imagine what happened in Tennessee and Virginia and places like that. Also, Missouri, Arkansas. It's just incredible that the South held to their principles like that, and perhaps if they hadn't, if they had fought the guerrilla war that I think everybody now realizes would have been the better way to fight the war, they may have won. But again, that's water over the dam. There's no rewriting history. But, you know, unfortunately, the reason we lost, I think, was because we're nice guys and the Yankees were not.
Yeah, well, I mean, Gene Andrews talked about it last week, following Forrest's lead. Stonewall Jackson wanted to raise the black flag even there in the early parts of the war. He said the Bible is full of such wars that is the only way to win the war.
And they could have won it right there at First Manassas if PGT Beauregard had not called off the troops, because they thought that somehow by pulling their punches the way that Putin is pulling his punches in Ukraine is the way to win the war. No, the way to win the war is to go in and finish it off. They should have done that. See, PGT.
Well, they certainly could have captured Washington. Whether or not they would have won the war by doing that, I don't know for sure.
They would have won the war had they captured Abraham Lincoln and held him hostage, just like the people in Texas at the Battle of San Jacinto captured Santa Ana.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I mean, you know, we're who knows? But no matter what, they should have fought a guerrilla war forever, like Afghanistan. America can't win a guerrilla war.
And, you know,
the United States can't win a guerrilla
war. Beauregard had the two crucial mistakes, which basically affected the outcome of the war. First was at Bull Run, First Manassas, where he didn't allow the troops to continue routing the Union troops into Washington, D.C. The second thing was at Shiloh, when Forrest and others were telling him, go down there and capture Pittsburgh Landing and prevent Don Carlos Buell's Union Army from crossing the river and landing there. If they'd done that, those troops wouldn't have been available and the South would have won. But unfortunately, who took over Albert Sidney Johnson's position as head of the Confederate Army when Albert Sidney Johnson was killed on the first day, none other than PGT Beauregard again. So Beauregard's inherent conservatism and lack of attacking skills and reluctance to attack was responsible for both of those big losses. And if the Confederacy had won both of those war battles, and if they had captured D.C. and had captured at Bull Run Abraham Lincoln in D.C., that would have ended the war then and there.
What do you think it must have been like to have been amongst a company of brothers fighting a battle like that? We've been deprived of being able to fight a battle we could win thus far here and now. And this time, you can't fight that way. Nick Griffin told me that years ago, and I never forgot that. You can't fight that way right now, and he's right.
But well, you can never really fight that way.
To have been there, though, at that time, to scream and to fight and to strive, that had to be such a time.
Well, I tend to be like the Jewish owner of the Oakland Raiders, Al Davis, who said, just win, baby. We could have won the war easily if we had not been outmanned by having every Irish immigrant came down the gangplank, and if he's a male, he was signed into the Union Army. That's why
our president put too much faith into their
gentlemanliness.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Say it when you meet me, how do you do? With everyone to be, pretty good show, Jabon. What goes up is sure to come out. A penny lost is a penny found. How do you do? And you got it back. Little bit of this and a little bit of that. How do you do? Fine, how are you? How you come on? Pretty good show, Jabon.
Well, you can't have good, nice things anymore, can you, Keith? You can't have Gone with the Wind. You can't even have Song of the South, and that's one. Yeah, they had a ride to that movie at Disney World, Splash Mountain, and now that's gone, and they put a ride for a black princess.
Let me apologize. That is the new modern version of that rather than the original 1946 one, which has some bowdlerization in there by Disney, by the modern Disney, the Eisner Disney. But let me tell you, if you want to watch a charming show with your children, watch Song of the South. Which you can get on YouTube.
And you can still get it on DVD at Dixie Republic.
Exactly. Get it right
one
there.
One of the few places you can get it.
Really, that is one of the most charming children's shows that you would ever see, and one that I could recommend to every parent if you want wholesome entertainment for your children from Disney. But be sure to warn them, as I warned mine, anything after 1966 is poison. Don't go there. We get all the stuff before 1966 when Walt Disney was actually in charge.
Let's go now to a place you might not expect we would go to during Confederate History Month. Let's go to the state of Colorado, where we have a guest, a friend, a supporter, a listener, however you want to describe him, all of those are fitting, who said, hey, James, is there any way I can be a part of Confederate History Month this year? I've got something for you. And I read what he wanted to share with us, and I said, my friend, we're going to clear a path for you, and we go to Brandon in Colorado right now. Brandon, tell us what you've got on deck for us.
Well, good evening, James and Keith. Thank you for having me on tonight.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring to the audience's attention something from the Trans-Mississippi Theater of the Civil War, which is neglected. A lot of people don't know much about it. It has a great overlap with the American West, which makes it very interesting. Particularly like to talk about the state of Missouri, which was basically fighting a civil war within a civil war in the state. Half the state was Confederate, the other half was for the Union. But a man in particular named John Newman Edwards, and I don't think he's any relation of yours, James, but he's a very interesting man, very little known today. He was born in Front Royal, Virginia, and he grew up in Missouri, and he was a newspaper man and a writer. And he was at war with the modern world. He grew up on the myths and the great stories of Western civilization, you know, the King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, the Iliad. And so he had a romantic view of Western civilization that he carried with him. When the war started, he joined up with his friend, General Joe Shelby, who's a very interesting man, very much like our friend Nathan Bedford Forrest, a cavalry commander with no prior military expertise. Joins the war, forms the infamous Iron Brigade in Missouri, which was the vanguard of General Sterling Price's army. And John Newman Edwards was his adjutant. So anyway, they fight many battles during the war in Missouri, Arkansas. Lee surrenders at Appomattox after the war. John Newman Edwards and Joe Shelby, they say, we're not going to surrender. They take 800 men. And they fight their way through Arkansas. The Confederacy has collapsed. Basically, there's anarchy in Texas, marauders, bandits, all that. They fight their way through Texas, restoring order in some towns. There's a lot of interesting stories there. They make their way to Eagle Pass, Texas, which that's pertinent to current events, as that's where Governor Abbott seized a park with the Texas National Guard recently. And that park is called Shelby Park, and it's named after General Joe Shelby. And his 800 men, and along with Edwards, passed through there on their way to Mexico after the war. Now, Mexico was being ruled by the French, who had installed the Austrian Maximilian as the Emperor of Mexico, trying to create a European monarchy in Mexico. Shelby and his men went down there and said to Maximilian and his court, we'd like to help you out. And Maximilian said, no, I don't want to antagonize the Union or Lincoln, but I'll give you some land close to the Yucatan, and you can all settle here. So they formed a colony of Confederates in Mexico, a former Confederates, and they had land, and they formed plantations and crops and all that. And it was very interesting because they, like, recreated the South in Mexico. And this lasted for a good 2 years. I mean, famous Confederates like General Sterling Price and Matthew Fontaine Maury all made their way down there and live there in this colony. And it lasted for 2 years until the French decided we're going to pull out of Mexico, and they left Maximilian to suffer his fate at the hands of the liberal uprising of Benito Juarez, which was mostly indigenous Mexicans. They overthrew Maximilian's government quite easily, and they executed him by firing squad. So these ex-Confederates had to flee. Now, Shelby and John Newman Edwards went back to their home state of Missouri, which was at that point suffering under the yoke of Reconstruction. And Edwards started up a newspaper, and he became a writer, and he formed a friendship with Jesse James and the James Younger gang, which was just getting started at that point. And single-handedly, he is responsible for creating the romantic and heroic legend of Jesse James as a Robin Hood-like figure and a, you know, a Confederate rebel that is still fighting the war just by other means, bank robberies and whatnot. And his view of Jesse James has carried over to this day. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt referred to James as a modern-day Robin Hood. And so it's all very fascinating because nobody knows Edwards today. But this one man created this, and he lived such a fascinating life. He died at the age of 50, an alcoholic, but his legacy lives on today. And it really just shows the power of what one man can do with the power of the pen. And his memory echoes across the ages in service of a cause that he held near and dear to his heart. So that's what I've got, but I feel like it's an incredible story and goes well with the whole theme of Confederate History Month.
Brandon, this is Keith Alexander. Let me ask you this. What is the connection between Mark Few, the basketball coach at Gonzaga, I believe he's still there, and Jesse James?
I don't know that one.
I don't know that one either, Keith.
Mark Few graduated from a college, I think it was Bryan College in Missouri, which was headed up by Jesse James's father. This idea that Jesse and Frank James were a couple of uncouth illiterates or something that turned, you know, to guerrilla warfare is the furthest thing from the truth. They were from the top of society in Missouri in the pre-war era, and their father was the president of this college that Mark Few graduated from.
Well, I got one for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
My name is James. I have one brother, a younger brother named Jesse. How do you think we got our names? But, hey, listen.
Well, maybe the Jameses were scoundrels after all.
that whole history of, and Brandon, I'm so thankful for you bringing it up, that whole history of the war between the states in Missouri, or Missouri, as they call it over there, is just fascinating. And this just goes to show, I want to give Brandon all the credit he is due. The standard TPC listener can carry this show. I mean, this is how great our audience is. I was spellbound listening to Brandon.
And I don't think we've ever gone over Joe Shelby's role in the Civil War and in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War before in Confederate History Month, haven't we?
No, this is it. And this is a listener in Colorado calling in with a segment that he put together himself, and I didn't review it. I mean, I had a little bit of an idea where he wanted to go, but it wasn't like he had to present it to me for approval. He comes on the air, the segment is his, and he nails it, Keith Alexander.
Yeah, I was afraid with Brandon it was going to be Joe Biden secretly calling.
No, come on.
No, I'm kidding you.
All right. Well, Brandon in Colorado, and of course, you know, Keith, we've met Brandon before, if you recall.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear from him again. And thank you so much for emailing us and asking to do this, because you've been a fantastic addition to Confederate History Month 2024. You got a final word for us, Brandon, out there in Colorado, holding down Dixie even on that side of the Rocky Mountains.
That blue state outpost.
Oh, yeah, Colorado is rough, but that side of the Rocky Mountains.
It's not doing so well anymore, but there's Confederates everywhere, and we hold the spirit of Dixie in our hearts. And, gentlemen, I really appreciate you having me on tonight, and I was glad to be able to share this story. And I think it's something people should read more about. There's a lot of good books on it. Just look up General Joe Shelby, fascinating guy. But there's a lot of books. John Newman Edwards himself wrote a book called Shelby's Expedition to Mexico, and it's still in print by the University of Arkansas Press. Fantastic read if anyone's interested. And I would say pursue more of these obscure heroes of the South, because I think they're out there, and we need more examples like that today.
So, you know, mention their name at every opportunity.
Absolutely. And Brandon, I got to tell you the truth, and this is coming straight from my heart. Not only did this fill a segment capably, this was actually a highlight of our series this month, and we've been stacking them up like cordwood, as my dad puts it, in the last couple of weeks with just guest after guest after guest, because we only had four Saturdays in April as opposed to five Saturdays in March around the world. And Brandon, you did a fantastic job. Thanks for coming on and sharing this message with us. We're going to wrap up Confederate History Month in the next hour, so stay tuned for that. And then in May, I don't know what we're going to do with ourselves, but we'll figure it out. We always do. Stay tuned, everybody. Thank you, Brandon.